John Martinez studied creative writing at Cal State University of Fresno and published poetry in El Tecolote, Red Trapeze, and the LA Weekly. He has performed as a musician and as a poet with Teatro de la Tierra and Troca, which was a poetry performance ensemble in the early 80s that was led by the current U.S. Poet Laureate Juan Felipe Herrera. Aside from being a poet and musician, John has also worked as an administrator for an LA-based law firm, and he currently lives in Southern California with his family. A Tale of Submission, out with Isote Press, is his first book of poetry. John Martinez, welcome to Words on a Wire.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Tim.
Now, as I understand it, you're calling us from what, Los Angeles? From a highway in Los Angeles or something?
Yeah, we're on the 10 freeway. It's pretty packed, and we're doing what I do every day, and that is to drive to Los Angeles.
Right, you're driving.
My home in Upland.
Hey, man, listen, we read your book, A Tale of Submission, out with Isote Press, and man, you know, it's just a phenomenal book, and I can't say enough great things about it, John, and I'm really excited about talking with you because I've known you for quite some time, and for me, I mean, as far as I know, this is your first book. How does it feel?
It feels like I should have been writing books back when I was a junior in college with
Levine.
If I would have done that, mm-hmm. then I would be a completely different person today.
You think so?
I didn't. I there was a twist in life, and I didn't. So it's kind of like the musician who was, he picks up his instrument,
right,
and he's already old. and he sees all his friends, you know, book award winners and Tim Hernandez.
Yeah.
I mean, Tim Hernandez not only is a star, he looks like a star.
Oh, you're so sweet, man. Thank you.
you think, oh, my God. So there's a sense of, like, where have I been? You know, it's almost like Twilight Zone.
Yeah, man. But I would say, and I think maybe you'd agree, because I've had conversations with you about these kinds of things in the past. But, you know, those kind of life twists, you know, those unexpected detours. I mean, that's what makes for you know, really, I think, insightful and rich poetry that has wisdom in it, right? I mean, versus had you just come straight out of maybe college or something, you know, like you said yourself, you know, you studied poetry early on, I know, and now you're here with a whole, you know, list of new experiences and life experiences and family and all these things. And so now you've got stuff to write about. I mean, isn't that part of the deal?
Exactly. I was going to mention that, but that was the plus.
Right.
And sometimes, you know, I always argue that a lot of writers are not writing true experience, because they don't have time to experience.
Right.
They're writing. And when I see that, you know, then it seems staged, you know.
Sure.
But I mean, and I don't want to, I'm not a critic, you know, so I'm not going to, but, you know, I work in the field of law, and I see all the messiness in our world. In fact, I'm working on a novel now. It's about an ambulance chaser and a crooked lawyer and a bad judge and a bad insurance adjuster. It's a novel, but, you know, I won't pitch my novel. But
that's all right. That's all right.
But everybody says it's Grisham. It's Grisham, and I'm like, no, it's not.
It's Martinez.
Grisham is Martinez. And another thing too is Grisham. I have a sense that he's not living the books. And while they're great and they're good for movies, it's a whole different experience. If you live it, is what I'm saying.
Right.
Then you see it differently. And you're right. You're right, Tim.
Right, absolutely.
You got to live.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, that's one of the questions I wanted to ask you, because I know that, like, life took a turn. And you know what? Actually, why don't we start there? Do you mind just going, stepping back a little bit? I know you studied there with Philip Levine at Fresno State back in the day.
It was way long ago.
And I recall you were publishing. I even read some journals, lit journals, like Red Trapeze from California there, that you had published some stuff in with, like, people like Lorna D. Cervantes and Gary Soto and of course, your wonderful brother, Victor Martinez, rest in peace.
Yeah.
You know, you were publishing those kinds of things back when, and then suddenly it was like you just dissolved, you disappeared, you know, and I'm wondering, what happened there? Tell us about that.
Well, you know, a lot of things. I mean, I was into poetry, and poetry, if you're an artist and you really love art, you start battling the world. Mm. Because the world is the most ironic, pissed off world that an artist picks up and says, I don't like it. That's why you have so many complaining poets. You know, to be a
those
poet
complaining
now,
poets.
Complaining, yeah. I go to readings now, and I hear these communist poets, and I'm like, you know, my shit is depressing. Your shit is depressing. Sorry, I'm focusing.
Yeah.
It's because it's not an easy world. The world's full of ironies. And people are cruel. You're not going to expect the president to be a nice guy. There's no flowery ending. You know, it's not going to happen. And if it does, God bless America. If it does. But it doesn't. It's not happening. In fact, right. We're in the most twilight zone times right now.
Yeah.
So, you know, so as a poet, what do? You sense that, so you start, like, the world starts pounding down on you, and at an early age,
right.
you get that, and you're like, oh, my God, I'm getting killed. And then on top of that, I moved in with Omar Salinas.
The poet,
he became my roommate. And,
wow.
And he was insane. I mean, and I was insane, and the world was insane. We were detached from it, you know?
Yeah, right,
And this kind of detachment kind of made me think that maybe what I'm doing as an artist is not healthy. You know, and it's because, you know, when you read big poets in the very beginning, I mean, I was reading Lorca, Neruda, Vallejo. I was crying in the college union about Miguel Hernandez's dying.
Right.
I mean, what kid does that? You know what I mean? I mean, I was like telling people, do you know who Miguel Hernandez is? Do you know what he used to talk to his wife? Do you know what's going on?
Right.
And I was 19, so... I mean, it was just too much. It was too pesado for me, bro. So I kind of like went the other way. I
stepped away.
I got it. I became an investigator, and I started trying to, like, it wasn't damaging, Tim. Mm-hmm. It was just that I needed help. I couldn't pay rent. You know what I mean?
Right. No, I hear
so
you.
I had to do something. So, and then as I got into it, I got married, you know,
right.
And then, the kids came, and then the house, and the wedding on the lawn.
The wedding on the lawn.
You know what I mean?
That does happen, yeah.
You know, and next thing you know, I'm sitting with, you know, five Jewish lawyers and a couple of, you know, white guys and two black guys that sound like white guys. And I'm in a bar, and I say, these are my friends? What the hell? What have I become? You know, not that bad. But
no, what do you mean by that? Yeah, what do you mean by that?
What I mean is that my friends became everything I wasn't because I became that.
Mm.
I put on a suit.
Right.
I went to the bar after work.
Right.
I gave my complaints that my life is stressed out. Here's my family. Oh, the mortgage. All that shit. It's really a lifestyle.
Right.
You know what I mean? And this is what I am. So when I looked around me, I was like, wow, what am I? I'm not that guy anymore, you know? And then Dick died.
I'm sorry I'm going to interrupt you here because I want to get to that, and I totally, we're going to have some time to talk about Vic as well. But, you know, all the things that you're talking about there are how I've known you. That kind of talk has always come from you, that very real, hard-hitting, no BS, you know, all that aside, has always come from you. So to be honest, it was jarring, and it was also beautiful when I opened up your book and started to read the poems, A Tale of Submission. You know, in my mind, I thought, wow, this is John Martinez? And, you know, because the truth of the matter is, they're very tender poems. This is the poet sort of, you know, stripped down, observing life around him and, you know, and the intimate relationships with others and his family, with the community, his intimate relationship with himself also. You know, these are very kind of tender poems, to be honest with you, and a very kind of... As the poet, the Puerto Rican poet Victor Hernandez Cruz says, you got to have all your tips on fire. You know, all of that has to be sort of illuminated when you walk around the world. And your poems are very much like that, you know. And then I realized, you know, because I'll admit, when I first read the title, A Tale of Submission, I thought, huh, I wonder what John Martinez is trying to do here. But then I read the poems. I said, wow, this is really a kind of a submission. I mean, is that how you would describe the poems in your book?
Yeah, I think you're nailing it, basically. You know, I didn't send you the introduction, but Ian Donald from La Roda.
Oh, M, yeah.
He did the M, I guess. Michael, actually.
Mm-hmm.
He did the introduction.
Michael Sedano.
And he's actually saying this is a book of obituaries. And it is.
That's right.
It is. But that's not what it was meant. I mean, I'm greatly influenced by Vic. I mean, caring for a house is one of my biggest influences.
Let me properly introduce. We're talking about your brother, Victor Martinez, who is a National Book Award-winning novelist of A Parrot in the Oven and a poet, longtime poet in standing until he passed away a few years ago, you know. But, yeah, talk about his influence in your life.
Well, you know, me and Vic, I was studying poetry in high school, and Vic was in Fresno State, and we were, talking about poetry. You know, we would talk about poetry. Me and Vic would talk about poetry like kids talk about baseball cards, okay? Mm-hmm. We would get into it very deeply. And then we started buying books, Vic was buying books. I was eating books, like, aggressively, you know, Vic built the library, and everybody kind of surrounded the library. We all wanted to impress Vic,
right?
You know, because Vic, for some reason, had that ability to draw people, to make people say, all right, I want to impress you.
Yeah, I
don't know what it was about him. He didn't have to open his mouth. I think it was a prickly hair. I don't know what it was, but, you know, it was just his demeanor. But then when he opened his mouth, he went, oh, my God. So we would go on and on about poetry. And then right when I went to college in my senior year, I was taking advanced poetry with Phil Levine. So I was in high school taking poetry.
Wow.
But, you know,
with Phil Levine. Wow.
With Phil Levine, yeah.
That's crazy.
And so I was, by that time, the Chicano poetry movement was picking up. Gary was becoming, you know, institutional, so to speak.
Sure.
Montoya was doing the Talol, the nationalist thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was becoming Montoya. There was a divide. There were those who wanted to be intellectual, adhering to tradition poets, and then there are those like Reels. I love Reels. I love Reels.
Mm-hmm.
But at first I was like, you know what? He just, because I was getting into the whole movimiento, and I was trying to reject the Western world or the American poetic institution, you know?
Right.
And because I was studying it. I mean, I was studying it with the Lord of the institution, you know? He was the guy that basically laid down the foundation.
You're talking about Phil Levine?
You know? Phil, yeah.
Yeah,
Phil,
right.
Like, he was like a brick wall.
Yeah.
And
right.
So that's where I was. I was in conflict. But then after that, I just, like, deserted it all.
Right.
So me and Vic love each other. When Vic passed away, our last communications were through text. And we were recalling books that we read when we were little boys. And imagery like Montale, Eugene Montale, The Storm, you know? And we were quoting The Storm. And I was like, we're quoting The Storm and he's dying. This is like literature, you know? This is really bad, you know?
Yeah.
I felt bad. I was like, what's going on? It's like my center was dying, you know?
If you're just tuning in, we are speaking with the poet John Martinez about his new collection, his debut collection of poetry, A Tale of Submission, out with Isote Press. And, you know, John, in talking with you, not just about your brother, Victor, you know, there are throughout time, there are always these families that are like artist dynasties or, you know, or even sports dynasties and what have you in their own sort of area, in their own fields, you know, of interest. But your family, the Martinez family, I mean, you have your brother Victor Martinez, a novelist, your brother Ramiro Martinez, who is a phenomenal muralist. You're a musician also, I know, besides being a poet. And, you know, I wonder, how did art come into your family's life? Because I know you guys were originally from Fresno's west side of that area, you know,
yeah,
which is
we
a
were in the
tough
project,
side. Yeah,
yeah.
That tough area, man. And how did art find you guys?
The Chicano movement. Back in the day, we were all smart. Like, we got all good grades. And so Bob Cruz, and I'll mention his name. I don't know where he's at. But Bob Cruz was a community worker.
Mm-hmm.
And he would go to the schools and he would look at transcripts. I mean, in those days, he let the shit happen. And he would, like, it was a Colegio de la Tierra.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a funded, federally funded, like, sub-college to help kids, you know, urban kids, you know, in their studies.
Right, right.
And so he would go to schools and pull transcripts.
Wow.
And he'd find the smart kids. And then he'd go to the house and, like, Fiat de Senora, you know, your kid is really smart, you know. Maybe we should try to get him to go to college, yeah. You know. And that's what he did.
Wow.
He went and he picked on Vic and he picked on Stella, mm-hmm. and he didn't leave us alone.
Wow.
And then my sisters, they became like Trotskyists, you know. I mean, by the time they were like high school or college, they were all with the Trotskyist League and feminists, and they were like, nice. You know, I was like, what the hell? You know, and it was the Chicano movement. They took us to the colegio.
Wow.
And the great artist. I mean, I was exposed. I'm bragging because I'm a Chicano. And I'm a Chicano, I'll tell you. I've been exposed to all the great Chicano artists of our time by chance.
Sure.
Like Magoo. Magoo was our teacher when we were little audio kids.
Yeah.
Magoo came and they brought us into murals.
Yep.
That's how art got in. That's how the whole idea of being an intellectual got in.
That's incredible.
I think it's good.
Yeah, obviously. Good. I mean, that's what I was, one of the things I was curious about, because like I said, I know your family is all artistic and have always made an impact in specifically in California, in that region, but, you know, just across the nation. Listen, John, would you mind reading us an excerpt from your book, A Tale of Submission?
It's crazy because we're on the freeway and I got this laptop and I really like doing this interview on this freeway.
On the 10, because it leads to El Paso, you know.
It's my book, if you know, you read it.
Yep.
There's this thing about time and memory and where does it stop and how do we deal with the time past when you're 55 years old and half of your buddies are dying and the other ones are dead and then the rest are like kind of like working out in the gym and so you start thinking, is my life there validity now or was there validity then, and what is more tasty? What is my life? So in my book, there's like this real variable time signature where I'm always going back to a time. The characters, one of the characters in my book, the little girl seeing the war-torn El Salvador, she actually lives there. Right. She's a little girl that never leaves. And that's basically the premise, is that our memories never leave us. And this is what I had to contend with when Vic died and my mother died, and there were certain people died. This is a very remorseful book. So I dealt with time, and I'm saying that time is valid.
Yeah, you get that
every
sense.
Aspect. You kind of get that sense.
Yeah, you do.
Book.
Yep, that's right.
So I'm going to get that field. There are few squirrels left in my memory, running up dust clouds in that dry field. We walked through the tall grass, green in summer, followed the winter's swiping of tumbleweed, my uncle's dreams gliding away from him like love. My brother's four brown salamanders on the ditch bank, BB guns and fleeing towards the reservoir, barefoot in Jesus with a clean beard and a woman's sigh. These were the days my mother kept, her church calendar crooked on the wall, her flour tortilla legs, my father's lust, her milk we walked away from, my grandmother's lost in her memory of children, her black and white husband, photos like thin voices she never said she heard. This is where the door opened to fat clouds and blue watercolor wash, and I spin my top on the kitchen table with open turkey cans, welfare spam, our neighbor, red lipstick on puffed brown lips, yawning on a chair my mother pulled out for her, the derelict dog with the new smoke collar, the red and white blue behind the mud face of Kennedy on that PJ rug hanging. I imagine myself a man who lives far from this home, from these years. I imagine my longing to pencil lake trot with full-blown paper mache guard in my eyes, my blank thumb. I thought I sinned, that this boy should live an eternity, always returning with a body of a praying mantis, and follow the same ditch bank with bow and arrow, passing my mother's sheets like white ghosts in the wind, that all of this never ended. And I could walk with myself in this time and in a time past, a time that never goes completely, that my mother will always be calling us in from that field infinitely, that fields die and return every year, and I go guilty of saving dreams and looking for traces of myself, like reaching for silk.
John Martinez reading from his new book, a collection of poetry titled A Tale of Submission. And that poem, John, is called That Field, right?
That Field, yeah.
That Field. No, that's a great poem. You know, you mentioned actually a little bit about, you referred to the sort of sense of time in your poems as you call them time signature a little bit ago. And I also know because, you know, I know that you're a musician, a guitarist. And are you a percussionist also, I think? Is that
right? I play congas. Initially, I played congas.
Oh, okay.
And then I played, well, you know, the guitar player got all the ladies, so...
The guitar player got all the ladies, so you went there.
When he made me move. Move the gear out of the van so we could go with a girl. I was like, what am I doing?
Playing the congas. I should be on the guitar.
That's what I'm doing.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to, you know, ask you how you saw music influencing, you know, your poetry. Or does it?
It does.
Right.
Music, there's always a time signature and you always, you know, either adhere to it or find a way to make it, I'll go around it and make it significant. Music is very complex. But yeah, I sense that communication is more than just words. And you see this in a baby. I have a new grandchild now.
Congratulations.
She's 3 weeks old.
Wow.
And I hear her, like, grunting, mm-hmm. you know, and she's searching for vibrations. And so communication... Mm-hmm. And how we see life, and I'm not a scientist, but how we feel life as a poet. My science is I'm a poet, okay?
Yeah,
so
exactly.
How we feel life is through sounds, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's part of feeling life is through sounds. So sometimes notes can become words, and notes could evoke emotion, and they do, and that's why it's so popular.
Right. Right.
Music, I think, is before, actually, it is before words. Actually, they used drums. The formation of language was through a drum.
Mm-hmm.
The tribes used to communicate with a drum.
Well, Amiri Baraka has a great poem about that also. He's a great poem that he did with, what's the jazz musician? I forgot his name. Billy something or other. But yeah, he has a poem about that. But yeah, absolutely, you're right. There is that kind of correlation, obviously.
So really, naturally, I was more inclined to feel. The whole thing is that we live. You say Martinez, why are they writers? Why are they poets? We lived in a time that was it was very intense.
Right.
It was very dysfunctional. You know,
right.
We came, and I'll be honest. You know,
yeah.
That's the thing about me and Big is different. I'm very like, I'll tell the world about myself. Big's like, no, don't say that. Don't say that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You know,
right.
Please don't say that. You know,
yeah.
You know what? To me, confession is everything.
Yeah.
You know, you go, you lose your mind, and the first thing you do is confess. That's the first thing you do to a psychiatrist.
Yeah, and to the pastor.
That's
yeah.
So confession is everything. That's why this book is very confessional. Well, I'm going to say this. We came from a time where every sound evoked an emotion. My father running into the room, blasting, drunk, throwing chairs around.
Mm-hmm.
My mother, like, crying and praying. That was also bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
Because suddenly all of this mess that we were in, that me and my brothers tied up in a rope knot, together, holding each other,
mm-hmm.
Suddenly my mom says that some God is going to cure it all. And that you're going to be better later. Yeah. I mean, it's a bizarre trip, you know?
Right.
So everything was very intense. I mean, I had uncles who had guns in their ankles.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? 15-year-old lovers, and they were 60, 50,
yeah.
you know?
yeah.
So, you know what I mean? And so, in this world, we saw the intensity of life. We saw guys getting shot in my other book. I have three books of poetry
right.
and that are coming out. But in the next book, I have these poems about this guy. There's like three poems of people getting shot.
Right.
I actually stood by a guy dying. And, wow. and I was so relaxed. I was like,
wow.
Did you see how his face is swelling like before our eyes? That's amazing. That's amazing. You know what I mean? We were like scientists. When I went to school, they did show and tell. And I was like, oh, I'm going to do show and tell.
How old were you at that time?
I was like 7 or 8.
Wow. Man,
and my mom's like, get in here. The cops are coming, you know.
And that's the world that you and your brother Vic and your muralist brother, that's the world, Romero. You guys all grew up around that, yeah, in Fresno.
Yeah, and poverty and like spam. And,
yeah, it's a tough side of town. You know, I'll wrap it up here by saying, you know, that's one of the things, John, that comes through in all of your poems is that real attention to sort of all of your senses, all five and even the sixth sense are just illuminated in all the poems. You're paying attention to the details, the minutiae, to the spirituality, to the, you know, to the sounds. I mean, that's what's apparent in your poems, and I really appreciate it. And you're right. I think, you know, on the other end of that, you have your brother Vic, who writes in a very calculated and, you know, very sort of and just he's a phenomenal writer. I mean, he's an award-winning writer, you know. But yours has its own distinct approach. And man, I just couldn't get enough of it. And I look forward to your other two books, also, John. Thank you so much for speaking with us,
Tim. Man, thank you very much, man. Thank
Absolutely.
You. I did listen to your program too. I got on the net, and thank you for what you're doing, Tim.
Hey,
you're doing a great job, man. And it's people like you, man, that make things happen. And I'm back to you. I'm so damned honored and proud when I see you. Like the last time I saw you, you were standing around Ruben all smug and shit. And you know, and we were right there in that party. And I was like, look at you, man. You're a star, man.
Oh, John,
you got to keep that thing up. You got to write a lot of books. Vic would want you to do that, Tim.
Yeah,
Vic
he is.
And me, and we all want.
Yeah,
Tim,
thank you, man.
I'm promising your audience now.
Thank
you're
you.
Going to see a lot of work from me, and I'm going to keep going. Thank you, Tim.